Since my last video hit, Flint has bent over backwards to avoid actually admitting that he knowingly uttered falsehoods on the Joe Rogan Experience. So at the beginning of this video, I want to very clearly show you a clip of Flint saying something he knows 110% for a fact is not true.
I'm deeply unhappy that you have associated me with white supremacism, racism, misogyny, anti-Semitism.
I mean, if you didn't notice, it was always the same quote recycled. So I said something once, and then it gets recycled in like 15 different pieces.
I understand, but you said it.
Now, as most of you are well aware, Flint has not just said this once. He said this numerous times. Every single time he writes an article about Graham Hancock, it includes this sort of language. From the article they're discussing in the debate, to the letter from the Society of American Archaeology to Netflix, to the article that he posted in his personal blog after the debate, to so many things in between, to every single time that he gets on Twitter and rails about it with the big old long thread, it will include a portion of this as well. Every single time he talks about Graham Hancock at length, it includes this language. It's not something that he said one time, but on the debate, he could totally tell Joe was not down with this, so he was back into a corner and he scrambled to save face, and his knee-jerk reaction was to bullshit his way out of it. So, having established that he does in fact have no issue saying things that are not entirely true in order to save face, let's continue to evaluate the rest of his response to my video. Hi, my name is Dan and welcome to Dunking.
When you tell one lie, it leads to another. When you tell two lies to cover each other, then you tell three lies. Oh, brother, you're in trouble up to your ears.
Flint's thread defending himself starts off talking about a bunch of crap that, well, I didn't. So I recognize what this is. It's a cheap attempt at misdirection. So we will just ignore the red herrings, wade through them, and get on to the part where he actually responds to what I said. When he does finally get to addressing my video itself, he starts with the plant domestication. But he doesn't even address what I said, not in any meaningful sense. The point that I made was that some plants, in particular rice, are extremely hard for them to discern the origins of, and there are anomalies in the genetic record. This is well known in the field. Almost every paper you will find on the genetic history of rice quickly admits this is very difficult to pin down, and the origins are not known. Matter of fact, sometimes you will see contradictory titles to these papers. In the debate, Flint attempted to make a case for plant domestication being something that we can say for a fact did not happen until 11,000 years ago.
What are the oldest seeds that you found?
Oh, the oldest seeds we have go back tens of thousands of years. The oldest domesticated crops we have go back about 11,000 years.
And where are those from?
From Syria, Turkey, the Fertile Crescent area, yeah.
Is it possible that there was domestication before that in other parts of the world?
I'm going to show you why that's not possible.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, that's kind of my goal there. Okay. Yeah, because it's not even a disproof of an advanced civilization. It's a disproof of agriculture, period, in the Ice Age.
Now, with wheat, the plant that he uses in the debate, Flint is right. We are pretty well aware of its genetic history. But rice is not so cut and dry. With rice, there are multiple genetic pathways to do the same thing. We have redundant genes that are directly related to the domestication process. So it does look like there's a very good possibility that they were domesticated and went back to the wild and then domesticated again. And now Joe Rogan, he saw this possibility and he asked Flint about it. And Flint was very clear in his response.
But is it possible that this cycle of domesticating wheat and beans and all these different things has taken place many, many times? And that if you left them alone, they would go back to the wild form where if there was a disaster and people stopped growing them in this particular region, how long would it take for them to revert back to their original
thousands
state?
Thousands of years.
How many thousands of years, you think?
Well, I don't know because I'd have to look that up because I know that we've observed this kind of stuff, domesticates going feral, but I don't have that off.
And you said how many?
He omitted the thousands of years part in his thread defending himself on Twitter. Now, according to Flint, he merely told Joe he doesn't know how long it takes. And this is not a small thing. Joe asked a very pertinent question, and Flint shut it down with a confident statement that excluded any possibility of Joe's idea being true. The statement, thousands of years, is false. In 100 years, it is clear in the record, and by 1,000 years, you may well not be able to tell if it was ever domesticated at all, as we see in the record of rice today. Now, I can't fault Flint for not knowing this information. No one can know everything. But he didn't say he doesn't know. He said thousands of years, and then he said he didn't know. I do believe we all know the term lie by omission. So this is exactly what we have right here. Next, let's talk about the ice core data. In my last video, I clearly demonstrated Flint has used a graph showing heavy metals from 1100 BC, but he spoke about the lead levels in the Ice Age over 12,000 years ago. Now, his defense was to claim that he merely showed the graph to prove that we could trace metallurgy, and then he shifts this statement.
And I'd say we could definitively prove there was no large-scale metallurgy in the Ice Age.
Into, however, I was correct when I stated there was no published evidence for metallurgy from ice cores. But he did not say there was no published evidence for metallurgy in the Ice Age. That's a neutral statement, one that I wouldn't take issue with. Compare that to what he said. We can be sure there was no large-scale metallurgy in the Ice Age. Now, how can we be sure if no testing's been done? We can't. We can make inferences, but Flint didn't talk about inferences in the debate. He made overarching, all-encompassing statements that are not completely accurate, not supported by the data. And then when it's held accountable for that, when I hold him accountable for this, his response is to claim that he didn't make these overarching statements. I just inferred that, you know, we don't have the evidence for it. Now, this is clearly dishonest behavior like the other two instances I've shown you. He has the opportunity to say, okay, I screwed up here. I said something wrong. I made a mistake. Instead, he just sidesteps it. Oh, I didn't say that at all. But we have it in video. Here we are. But even this falls woefully short of defending his position. Now, I held up two papers that showed that we do see spikes in heavy metals, particularly lead, in the Ice Age, following glaciation patterns. More glaciers made for more heavy metals in the ice cores, and the academic consensus is this is due to lower sea levels allowing for more dust to accumulate in the ice, and this dust carries some of those metals in it. Now, this is an entirely reasonable hypothesis, most likely accurate. But my point here is to show you where Flint overspoke when he was representing the science and the data, and this is clearly one of those cases. When I show you what I'm about to show you, you're going to want to take a second look at every single paper like this that you come across. The dust that they speak of, that they say was blown around because there was lower sea levels, that's the exact same dust you would expect to find if metallurgy was done in that region. They dig at the same dirt up, man. It's the same shit. And this accumulates in these ice cores, and thousands of years later, they'll be taken into a lab. A Teflon-coated saw would cut it and hopefully not deposit any metals into the ice at all. Then distilled, pure water is used to slowly melt the ice, and a fine filtration system gathers the particulates, which are then chemically analyzed. Now, all along this process, the potential for contamination exists and is heavily combated. But when this process is done, with any luck, they will have a very specific set of trace elements. And with some analysis, they can determine quite a bit from these metals, oftentimes straight up labeling lead as anthropogenic lead, denoted as PbAnth, and then this means they're quite certain that this lead came from humans, and a lot of this is easily discerned because the complex chemicals we use in more modern times are not normally found in nature. But if you roll back the clock, we get to the dust issue. Is this dust from mining, or is it just from wind blowing off topsoil? If you think no one was digging up metal back then, you're going to assume this is naturally occurring dust. But if you think someone was digging up metal back then, this is exactly the kind of thing you would be looking for. And now I need to remind you, I do not believe there was metallurgy going on back then. I am just trying to show where Flint has overstepped the limits of our scientific knowledge. For example, I am assuming that there was no metallurgy back then, and I assume that that was from dust. But I am aware that it is the same fingerprint that we would find if it was from metallurgy. So I am aware that I cannot say for certain that my opinion that there is no metallurgy in the Ice Age is true. I can say that most likely it was true, and I can say that I believe that because we have no archaeology sites that would line up with the deposits of metals that we find in the ice cores. But that is not proof that there was no metallurgy in the Ice Age. And this is a very important distinction to make, one that Flint failed to make and left it on Layman Dan to do it for you. After I'd already finished recording, I noticed that Flint seems to be doubling down yet again on this sort of thing. Now he claims that there is no such thing as an isotopic signature for metallurgy, which is false. While there is no solitary isotopic signature for metallurgy, there are several factors that are used, and in some cases, as I previously stated, the lead is denoted as anthropogenic lead. A great example of this is when they look for isotopic anomalies in a certain time. For example, if lead, copper, cadmium, and other metals all go up and down more or less together in the historical record, but then we see a rise in one or two of them but not the others, human metalworking is an immediate suspect. And from here they will look for specific trace elements that are associated with metalworking and determine if the spike is indeed from humans or not. Now, Flint could have spent just a few minutes reading up on this, but instead he continues to misrepresent this science to the public. One of Flint's defenses is to say that I'm nitpicking, and I'm just holding him accountable for common language that was used in a relaxed setting. But it is quite clear that these are not mistakes. They're strategic decisions, all made to bolster his position. He accidentally forgot he told Joe it takes thousands of years for crops to revert to a wild state. He accidentally forgot there was no metallurgy in the Ice Age when what he meant to say was there's been no testing done for that period. He accidentally forgot he said far more than one time that Graham was spreading white supremacist rhetoric. He even forgot how to use basic scientific language that he presumably uses every day when he teaches students. I find this a little hard to believe. And finally, the issues of the claims of racism need to be addressed, as to be honest, anyone who's followed me for like the last 6 months is well aware, this is really the crux of the issue between me and the archaeologists on Twitter like Flint. Now, the idea that the Quetzalcoatl legend has been corrupted by 16th century Spanish Catholic influences is entirely likely, even probable, I would say. However, this does not mean Graham's position is in any way, shape, or form associated with white supremacy. And now Flint would be quick to say, oh, I never said that Graham was associated with white supremacy. I just said that he needs to separate himself from it. But that's not what other people hear. For example.
Recently on this channel, we did a deep dive into a new Netflix series called Ancient Apocalypse, which is all about how Atlantis is real because no societies of color could have developed substantial architecture or astronomy.
And yes, she got her info from Flint Dibble.
Archaeologist Flint Dibble points out how Graham is doing nothing new when it comes to disrupting the paradigm or whatever. He's just repackaging the work of Ignatius Donnelly, who also believed in Atlantis and white supremacy.
Now, Flint is not just some guy talking in a vacuum. He's an academic that's considered an expert in the field, and he has convinced other academics that Atlantis hunting is not just connected to or associated with racism. They believe it is straight up racist.
Ancient Aliens, Atlantis Reborn, and now Ancient Apocalypse are not big archaeology keeping the truth from us. It's an insidious plot to make white supremacist conspiracy theories consumable to a general audience.
And this is the issue. When people go to an academic for information, and that information is so twisted up that it leads to them making erroneous conclusions, that's a problem. And when I tell Flint numerous times that this is happening, he just says he doesn't care. He knows that people are walking away, academics are walking away from what he says with the wrong take, and he gives zero shits. He attributes the origins of modern Atlantis hunting to Ignatius Donnelly, a man who was very much a white supremacist. But he knows for a fact that he didn't start modern Atlantis hunting. Flint knows it was started by Charles Étienne Brasier de Bourbourg and Augustus Le Plongeon, both of who believed the Maya were the superior culture after the Great Flood. Flint just doesn't care if this gets lost or not. He has no problem removing the credit for the work from these two archaeologists. Instead, he attributes it to Ignatius Donnelly so that he can claim that the origins of Atlantis hunting are racist. The facts don't seem to matter just as long as he gets that dig in. Well, thank you so much to all my Patreon supporters. Hang on, I got one more thing to talk about. The now nameless Ice Core specialist that, you know, I had a nice little Zoom chat with and stuff. He doesn't want to be named anymore in my videos, but he was a little waffly on Twitter, right? He did not say on Twitter what he said to me in the Zoom chat. Very, very much different, as a matter of fact. But I emailed him, and he did reach out and change things a little bit, and still a little waffly, though. It's not at all as robust or cut and dried or clear as even the email he sent me, which I don't really want to show a screenshot of the email he sent me. So for now, I'm just going to say that he missed an opportunity here. He could have taken this chance to educate all of my viewers and anyone that Graham shares my video with, which just tens of thousands of people this last time, could have learned about the science that he tries to promote. Instead, here you have me telling you how they isolate the particulates and melt the ice and try to eliminate contamination. This is the very real cost of social media pressure. Flint and his friends reach out to this ice core specialist, hound him until he doesn't feel comfortable making the kinds of statements that he did to me in private. And then we're excluded. I mean, we're cut out of the entire thing now. The people that are claiming that they want to educate people about science, they don't even want to talk to us anymore. They poison the well, push us all into a little corner, and then they wonder why they have to rely on somebody like me to talk about this stuff. They can't trust you guys because you all pressure each other to lie or to change your stories or to just gently massage the facts just a little bit enough until it lines up with the rest of us. And there's no more better evidence than the way that this guy has acted since the vast difference between what he said to me in private and what he said to me publicly, which really sucks and puts me in a weird spot as somebody who criticizes scientists for this kind of behavior. But I'm not making a video about him today.